This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Joining us on the Jodcast today is Professor Tom Shanks from the University of Durham, who has just given a talk on the problems with the standard cosmological model. So, first off, Tom, welcome to the Jodcast and thank you for being interviewed.
Hello.
And, well, I'd like to jump in there and ask, what is the standard cosmological model, first of all?
Standard cosmological model is a Big Bang model. It has basically, it's a universe which is not just composed of the ordinary particles that make up you and me, the protons and the neutrons, but it also has something called cold dark matter, which are particles which I would say haven't quite been discovered yet at places like the Large Hadron Collider in Geneva or in any other laboratory, and that makes maybe 30% of the universe's density, and the other 70% is something called dark energy, which nobody knows anything about either, so it's a good subject for doing research.
So, from what we know about 4% of the universe is matter, like yeah. Us and what we see in stars, and then the cold dark matter, and then the dark energy. So, why do we think it's comprised of these three constituent parts?
Because there are very good observations that suggest that this is a very good model for the universe. The main piece of evidence for the cold dark matter is the way that the cosmic microwave background looks. Now that is the light from the very first stage of the universe's history. It's a sort of glow from the Big Bang. Because it comes from such an early stage when things were so unevolved and things were so raw and young, that it makes you think that you can tell a lot about the universe and its subsequent history. So we're seeing this light from a time when the universe was 1,000 times smaller than it is now, and that makes you think you're getting at the heart of things. And so what we do is we look at how the light in the microwave background clumps on the sky, so you draw maps of it like we draw maps of anything else, like on the Earth, but we draw maps of the sky in this Big Bang light, and by analyzing how much the light clusters, we can tell what the constituents of the universe were to cause the clumps, for example, to be the size that we see them. They are something like the size of a full moon on the sky, and that implies, for various reasons, a model where you have these exotic particles, these particles that we haven't discovered in the laboratory yet. They're called cold dark matter particles. So that's one of the prime pieces of evidence for them, the cosmic microwave background. But then for the dark energy, there is a different method. We look at supernova, which are huge exploding stars where a star briefly becomes the luminosity of a galaxy. And so we can pick these things out to great distances in the universe with our telescopes. And these supernovae have a very good property in that they all peak at roughly the same brightness. And that makes them what we call a standard candle. It means if you know how much light is coming from a supernova, because you know its intrinsic luminosity, that means you can work out very easily the distance to that supernova. And then we can plot that distance against its redshift. Redshift tells us how fast the universe is expanding, and what the supernova data tell us is that the universe isn't just expanding at a constant rate, it's actually accelerating. And that is a very strange situation for the universe, very strange state for it to be in, because what you might expect is that the universe is bound by gravity, and you might think that will make the universe tend to contract or at least decelerate, but what we find is that the supernova tell us that it's actually accelerating, and in that situation what you're looking for is some anti-gravity type force, which they give the strange name dark energy, and that is a sort of repulsive gravitational force that comes out of nothing. It comes out of the vacuum, and it doesn't have, usually for gravity, attractive gravity, you need masses for the gravity to attract each other, but in this case it's a repulsive force, but it's still covered by the gravitational laws of physics, and it gives the universe an extra push and ultimately makes it expand faster than we were expecting. And so what we're learning about here, from how fast the universe is expanding and the fact that it's accelerating, is we're learning something about the vacuum, and that the vacuum might contain dark energy, and that dark energy goes to make up the energy or the mass budget of the universe, along with the cold dark matter we just talked about, and also the ordinary particles that we know for sure are there.
why do we think the cold dark matter is, well, cold and not warm?
That's a complicated question. It's something to do with the speed of the particles. When things are hot, they tend to speed around a lot, and these cold dark matter particles, they don't speed around a lot because they decoupled. They were out of contact with all the hot material at a very early stage in the universe, and that's why we call them cold, because these days they do not have the sort of velocities that some other particles would have. And so the particles that would come out of equilibrium with the hot matter later on, you could see them moving around faster because of the higher temperature. So that's why we divide these exotic particles into cold and hot, basically depending on the speed that they move around at.
And with the cold dark matter model, you were describing some of the problems with it. Can you explain to our listeners what some of these problems may be with this model?
That's what we said in the talk, that I sometimes see the BBC Horizon programme. I sometimes see Brian Cox on the or on Stargazing. And what they says is that, look, we can make a model of the universe that works, but we don't just need the particles that make up you and me. We need this cold dark matter particles as well, and there are 10 times more of those than there are of ordinary material. And then he has to say that, oh, and by the way, at that point, it's still not finished. We then still can't make it work without adding another 2 or 3 times worth the mass of dark energy in the universe. And then we have this model which works, but it's very complicated. And that's what I was saying in the talk, that you wonder at that point in the Horizon program or in Stargazing that some 12-year-old boy might phone in to the BBC and ask the question that I've just asked, isn't this model getting too complicated? It works, but it has all these extra components that we haven't quite discovered. And is that not a bad thing in terms of a scientific model? And that's basically the question that I've been trying to ask today, is the model has many good points. It fits the cosmic microwave background. It fits the supernova magnitude redshift relation, or luminosity redshift relation. But can we really believe in it till we found the cold dark matter particle, or understood how the vacuum works with this mysterious vacuum energy that has this strange repulsive gravitational force, and where does that come from?
Could the Large Hadron Collider, for example, be used to find some of these mysterious particles which may be made of the cold dark matter?
So they always say that the Large Hadron Collider in Geneva, which smashes together particles to make other particles, they always talk about that as being a microscope, because you're looking at the very small scale. But it's a microscope that may also help us understand the problems of the universe on the very largest scales, because some of the particles that may produce may be some of these cold dark matter particles. In fact, that was what was expected in the Large Hadron Collider, even by the present time. You may have heard of the Higgs boson that they're looking for as one of the particles that the particle physicists are interested in finding to explain the mass, certain aspects of the mass of the universe. But before they were going to discover that, they expected to find these cold dark matter particles, and to date they have found absolutely nothing. And that's what encourages me out into the open to make talks like the one I've given today, in terms of if the particle hasn't been discovered, it may mean that some other model is applying, and that there's still room and time to look at alternatives, maybe alternative models which might be simpler.
And some of the other problems you were explaining was the clusters of galaxies.
So what I was doing was talking about rich clusters of galaxies, and the reason they're interesting is because that's where the missing mass problem, or the dark matter problem, actually had its origin. Because in the 1930s, an astronomer called Fritz Zwicky found that from looking at the velocities of the galaxies in these rich clusters, that they were moving around at a rate which implied that the cluster had a huge mass to make the galaxies in the cluster move so fast. But the amount of stars he could count up in those galaxies were something like a factor of 100 times less than was needed to account for these fast velocities of the galaxies. And in that circumstance, he coined the phrase missing mass, mass that we couldn't see lit up by stars, or dark matter, which you needed to make the physics equations work in terms of the dynamics of what was happening in these galaxy clusters. And obviously, many people try to match up the expectations from particle physics theories that there might be a cold dark matter particle discovered at the Large Hadron Collider, and it may be that particle that forms the dark matter that also explains the missing mass or so-called dark matter problem in the rich galaxy clusters. But what I was trying to say was that that problem, to some extent, had got less in the intervening time between Zwicky discovering the dark matter problem, in that from X-ray astronomy and X-ray telescopes, we see that these clusters shine brightly in the X-ray region of the spectrum, and that's what you expect just from ordinary matter that's moving around at high speed in just in terms of a hot gas, and that hot gas is actually many, many times, orders of magnitude times, more massive than the stars that Zwicky was already originally comparing his missing mass to. And so to some extent, the dark matter problem has gone away, more accurately, we're only looking for a factor of 4 or 5 in terms of dark matter now, whereas used to be we're looking for factors of 60 to 600 in that dark matter problem. So then you get to the point of, is it worth, for a factor of 5 in an astronomical observation, is it worth invoking a complete density of new particles which haven't quite been discovered yet at the LHC?
So the current models are actually quite complicated in making up a lot of ignorance involved in these models. What simpler versions could be put forward to explain the observations?
Well, I was trying to say that why don't we take the clue from the rich cluster of galaxies where we find all this hot gas in the cluster, and that gets close to explaining the missing mass problem on its own, and it would be even better for that type of model where you're talking about ordinary gas, hydrogen atoms essentially, making up the missing mass in the rich cluster. It gets even better when you realize that the amount that it explains goes up the more the expansion rate of the universe goes down. It sounds strange, but everything in cosmology depends on the distance to objects. So knowing the redshift of an object, how fast the object is going away from you, is one thing, but you need to know its distance, and the distance-redshift relation has been an incredibly fraught area in terms of astronomical observation. This constant that relates velocity of recession and distance is called Hubble's constant, because of course Hubble discovered this in the 1920s. But the value of the proportionality of this distance-velocity-recession relation, Hubble thought it was 500, and it's now come down to something like 70. So it's a very uncertain number. So whereas we know the velocity of recession and the redshift, therefore, very accurately from spectroscopy, it's always been the case that we're much more unsure how to translate that velocity into a distance. And to be honest, to a factor of 10, we were a factor of 10 off originally. And what I was saying today is if we actually happened to be a factor of 20 off originally, i.e. a factor of 2 different Hubble constant from what we think it is today, then that would allow us to explain all of the missing mass problem in the rich clusters with this ordinary gas material. And then the question is, if you accept that line of argument, can you make this model with just ordinary material and a low Hubble constant? Can you fit the other things that we talked about earlier, which was the cosmic microwave background and the supernova Hubble diagram? And it was the cosmic microwave background that I find the most difficult to accommodate in this simpler model. But I talked about various ways around that problem today, some of which will work and none of which may work ultimately, but we have to try for the sake of simplicity.
Well, this way, if you use some of these alternative methods, will this eliminate dark matter completely?
Of course, I would say I hope so. And I think, to some extent, I know that many would hope, more than just me, that dark energy gets eliminated, because it's a very difficult thing to make an argument that it's in any way simple. But the difficulty is getting around the microwave background. The information you get from the microwave background, this light at the beginning of the universe, is such a very powerful observation. So what you have to say is that either in the telescopes that observe it, there was a mistake, or there was something that in the path from the Big Bang to the present day, that light had to go all that way from there to our telescope, and that something interfered with it on the way, and that's how you would try to get around this problem. But it's not easy, and that's why the standard model is. The standard model has the benefit that it fits these data like the microwave background and the supernova very, very well, but it has these remaining issues that make you think it can't be the whole truth, at least, or may even be wrong because of these very deep underlying issues having to depend on particles that have not been laboratory detected, and also the dark energy in the universe, this strange repulsive force which is unexpected and hasn't got the size that we expect it to be. These are all very difficult problems, and it may be that future young astronomers and particle physicists go on to discover why the dark energy is the way it is and why the cold dark matter is the way it is, or they might find that it's a different model altogether. And of course, I personally hope it's my model.
In that case, thank you, Professor Tom Shanks, for telling us about alternative explanations of the cold dark matter.
Thank you for
your interest. It's been a pleasure.
Cheers.
Cheers.